We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment.
I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Thank you for tuning in. If you are still listening to your Lakers podcast this morning instead of tucking it all away, you are a trooper, because that one stung. Lakers lose a heartbreaker, 101-99, tantalizingly close to sending it back to LA, tied at one. But somewhere after Anthony Davis hit 14 straight shots, it was just like, forget about DPOY. Watch this. It was just unbelievable on offense. Lakers go up by as much as 20. Denver makes a defensive adjustment, puts Aaron Gordon on AD. And I think there's a very critical story to be told from that point on the offense, but I'll put that on the shelf for now. It's a slow grind type of comeback, right? Lakers are still fighting, right? I don't want to tell the whole story of that part of the game right now, but it wasn't one of those, you know, 10-0 lose the rope, they're not trying type of thing. I thought the Lakers' effort was good last night, but Denver's a great team, and the Lakers never solved the adjustment that they made. And it culminates in a step back from Jamal Murray, just an amazing shot. Mike, they hit 7 straight shots down the stretch. I can only imagine what that game felt like in person. So walk us through it.
Yeah. First of all, the team got back, I want to say, at about, what was it, about 2:30 or something like that in the morning, local time. And of course, it felt like 3:30, having been in Denver all week. And the level of deflation on the plane was as expected after that, because I think it's not just the being up big. That part to me is a little bit overrated. A big lead in the modern NBA, playoffs or not,
of course,
is just something where the team is going to make a comeback. Like, we saw two games this season in which the Lakers trailed by 20 in the fourth quarter and won. So I don't put quite as much stock into that. In fact, I give the Lakers credit for being so good to build a lead like that in that kind of an environment, especially after taking a loss. At the end of the day, I think that I would first give Denver credit. They hit 7 straight shots in the final 3 minutes. They had one turnover. That was the play where LeBron took the ball from Jamal Murray and went down and dunked it. But they hit every other shot. And, of course, Murray hits the 2 jumpers in the final minutes. He got the 2 free throws on the previous possession. And then the rest of it was just Jokic being the best player in the world and getting to his spot in the middle of the lane, no matter what was going on and who was guarding him, and the earlier success of Anthony Davis, and he gets them, either for himself or for somebody else, just great shots. And that is why they are who they are. And it's just on the one level, like, the Lakers, they have to feel this devastation of just finally feeling like they did it. Like, they got over the hump, they beat this team. Until they didn't. Mm-hmm. And to grapple with that emotionally and mentally, this is the whole sports metaphor for life thing. It's when you put everything into something and it gets taken away. And part of it is your own doing. I'm sure we'll get into that. There were some adjustments that the Lakers probably could have, would have, should have made and all that. But ultimately, Denver ripped this out of their hands, just Indiana Jones style. They really just snatched this And that's a hard thing to handle in life. You know, how do you bounce back when somebody gets you down like that? I think it's helpful that the Lakers get an extra day. Tuesday, it's just sort of off. They're not going to the facility. They get Wednesday to kind of recenter themselves at a practice, and then the game will be Thursday. But there's no denying kind of that feeling of devastation, I think, that you could see on the players' faces. The last thing I'll add, Darius, is just being in the building. It never felt like the game was over. And I think that's a testament to Denver. It's a testament to a champion that had won the previous year. And, you know, the Lakers, I don't think they just took their foot and lifted it off the gas. I thought Denver put theirs on it, and it ultimately gets back to some of what the personnel is and how, like, what the Lakers, what could they really do when Denver puts their foot on it? And when Jokic is super determined to get into the middle of the paint, what can they do? Now, on offense, I think it's a different story, but
that's where the story is on offense. That was the second straight game, Mike, where they struggled on offense in the second half.
Yeah. And the only part of that, in the feeling of the game, when you are, it's very difficult to resist the human nature element to just hold on. Like if you're playing ping pong and you're up 20-13, you know, you might start just making defensive shots back, and all of a sudden it's 2014, and then it's 2016. And instead of hitting your forehand and really like just winning that final point,
You got those 20 points in the first place.
Yeah. Or in the NFL, when you get the big lead and in a playoff game, you get into prevent defense. It's not just like the Lakers in this game. This is human nature that you have to fight, and you have to try and find a way to retain that aggression, and what got you there and what are you doing, and not just going into the dribble out the shot clock or roll the ball. So that's why sometimes I think these leads get shrunk. And this is the ebb and flow of a game. But Darius, it was a tough one from a Laker perspective, obviously, to take. And I wonder, as you were watching from afar, what was standing out?
Oh, a bunch of things. So first of all, just wanted a basketball game. It sucks to be on the wrong end of one of these. The Lakers have been on the right end of these a bunch of times in my life. Went to school in Northern California near Sacramento at the same time when the Lakers and Kings were battling. I was watching in my college apartment when Kobe misses a runner, Shaq gets an offensive rebound, and he misses a putback, and then Vlade taps the ball out, and it lands right in Robert Horry's hands, and Horry hits a three, and it wins the game. And I walked right outside, and I grabbed the handrail that's in front of our front door, and I shook that shit like I was the Ultimate Warrior shaking the top rope in a wrestling match. I was on fire. And so I have been on the other side of that and understand the glory that comes from watching your team hit a game-winning shot, particularly in the playoffs. And there's a crushing feeling that's on the other side of that when your side is the side that comes up short, particularly in a game where they did everything they did in order to win the game, and the other team just did one or two things more. And that deflated feeling, Mike, I think that there's layers to that onion. The Lakers are facing a team that punishes you for your mistakes. And I think that there's a mental toll that happens throughout the game beyond the mental toll that happens in the aftermath of a loss like this as well. For all the things that stood out to me, it was sort of this cat and mouse game of resiliency that the Lakers were playing throughout the game. And to Mike's point about giving the Nuggets credit, but also like looking, the Lakers being able to look themselves in the mirror and understand that down the stretch, they fought too. Mm-hmm. And they made a ton of plays too. The Lakers made a bunch of plays, and it was like, oh, are they going to hold on here? And it just so happens that it reminds me of J.J. Redick asking LeBron, luck in the playoffs. And LeBron said, you need it. You absolutely need it. And the play that stands out to me, Pete, is Jokic has the ball in the open court. D'Lo goes to strip him, and Jokic basically picks up the ball at 35 feet and heaves the ball at the basket, trying to draw a foul. Like, that's a mental mistake from Jokic, and it's something that he tries to do a bunch, like, or that he's tried multiple times over the course of the season to draw that specific foul, and he never draws it. But it's sort of like the game that he plays within the game of, can I draw this foul? And they didn't call that foul. It wasn't a foul, whatever. But the ball bounces in the only place it could possibly bounce for Aaron Gordon to have a chance to chase it down. Like, Aaron Gordon's making the play. And so you sort of make your own luck in that case, but the ability to track that ball down and then fling it back out to Michael Porter Jr., who then hits the game tying three at 95. Those are plays where you can call it fortuitous or you can call it lucky. I tend to think like you make your own luck to a certain extent, but those are the sorts of plays that the Lakers had to bounce back from. And in essence, like, they did several times. Like, the game, they easily could have lost this game by 10 points, by 12 points, based off of the type of, like, climb back that Denver was doing and the momentum that they had coming down the stretch. And so I was both encouraged by what the Lakers were able to accomplish in this game while also being super discouraged by the outcome and obviously the nature of the loss.
Yeah, from the perspective of the deflated feeling of course that you have after a game like that, since these two teams have history from last year, I think that really contributes to it. I wonder what that feeling would be if this series were judged on just its own merits, right? Where none of what preceded it, because like that was the first time that we've played them. It's that whole, you know, pushing the rock a little bit up the mountain, and you know, Lakers are getting a little bit closer every game, every time they play them, to getting there. And that was the first time it was like Lakers are kind of kicking their ass right now during stretches. That did not happen in last year's series, right?
Not once.
Not a single time.
Not once.
And so it was like, and so that's what prompted the adjustment, the Gordon adjustment that when we get more into the diagnosis of what actually happened, we'll get into. But the Lakers hung tough in Denver against a reigning champion that's a great team, that losing two road games to that team, there's no shame in that. And we've always said over the course of years that that's holding serve in the playoffs right now. Being down 0-2, that's a tall hill. That's a huge mountain to climb, right? I just think that from a despair standpoint, the team's playing very good basketball, that it's like the teams kept getting better from a certain point in this season. They really started to improve. We've met the final boss that brings that out of you in ways that other teams don't. This is exactly why I think playing Denver is great for the team. It's like you either win the series or you find out exactly who you are. And so I hope that they're able to keep that level of spirit. I'm totally with you, Mike, on having that extra day off to just today just be like, fuck, you know, and get over it and be able to move on. So talk to me about that, Mike, about that, like, because that's got to be the first thing that needs to happen, because any of the schematic stuff, any of the lineups or anything like that kind of come after that.
Yeah, this is so just having watched a lot of playoff series, I think the big picture part of this that's difficult for the Lakers to cope with, and probably that LeBron knows better than anybody else, is that if you're going to win this series, that had to be a win. You know, and now at the same time, I think there's sort of the recognition that this, like, the part that you can have some peace with, and this will be, again, we'll see what happens, but is that if you have to play that close to perfect for the Lakers, not just for what they have, then that usually means the other team is better. And
that's the thing. I push back on that. How many layups did we miss? We didn't play close to perfect.
The Lakers got three good performances, Mike. So they got a great performance from Anthony Davis. They got a bounce back and very good performance from D'Angelo Russell. And they got on a sliding scale for LeBron James, probably like an A-minus game. He was great early. He tired late. And that's one of the things that's going to happen when you're playing at altitude and 39 and all this other stuff. But they did not get excellent performances from anyone. Like, they didn't even get a good performance from anyone else besides Torian Prince, who I thought was good again, but he played a limited role. Austin was fine. Rui was rough. like in this game. I thought his size mattered in a lot of different ways, but it's just like, and you can point to Denver too and say like Jamal Murray, he was whatever for 20 sure. something. Like he didn't have a great night either. And that's why I agree with the idea that this needed to be a win, but the Lakers can play better than this. It hurts though, because you're right. This needed to be a win based off of the level that both teams played to for sure.
Yeah. But I was going in the other direction. Yes, LeBron in the fourth quarter, LeBron had somehow tapped into his reserve tank.
Yeah.
And he somehow finds a way to go five of nine. He had a couple threes. He finishes at the basket. Like he scores 12 points. So LeBron, do you know what he did in the third quarter? Right. Like LeBron was 1 for 4 for 4 points. You know, he did have some assists then. In the second quarter, LeBron was pretty quiet. He was 1 for 3. Now, this is when Anthony Davis was scoring on Jokic whenever he wanted. And that's part of what kept him in it. Russell hits the 6 threes in the first half. I don't point to like role players not playing well. This, I was in the building. It was like at minimum Western Conference Finals level of intensity.
Great game.
More like a finals game. Role players don't do much in those games.
And you don't shoot all that great. Even if you're a really good shooter, you got to just find a way to keep playing the game and grinding through it because everyone's closing out hard. You're adjusting. It was a great game, Mike. I'm so glad you pointed this out.
Yeah. I mean, you know, so KCP, he had the one amazing dunk. He was 0 for 4 from 3, 2 for 7 mm-hmm. overall in the game. Reggie Jackson was 0 for 5 off the bench. Peyton Watson was 1 for 4, right? So Christian Braun made some big plays late, give him credit. But Torian Prince made a couple of key plays. He had a couple of threes. So you have a couple guys doing a couple of things. But for the most part, this is the Stars game. And to me, their star, Nikola Jokic, he has 27, 20, and 10 in a game where Anthony Davis kicked his ass for half of it.
Yeah.
Like
talk about a floor, huh?
That's in LeBron. Yeah, it's just in LeBron was, again, in the fact that LeBron is doing this, I think like we're going to need some history we're going to need to see what other players, like what does Kevin Durant do when if he gets to keep playing, which they're now, what is Steph Curry going to do? Some of these other all-time greats. I don't think they're going to do what LeBron just did in this kind of a game. Mm-hmm. I just don't. And so who's the next guy? This is the disclaimer of the whole season. It's absolutely ridiculous that LeBron is still able to do this, but he can't match Jokic right now in a game like this. And so that's what I meant about losing a game is one thing, but could LeBron and AD and the rest, could they have done this three more times against Denver? I think it's unlikely, but that would have at least given them a shot in the arm coming home. You know, having this kind of, okay, over the hump in terms of at least beating them, but having given all of that to not do it. I think we're going to see a strong response from the Lakers in Thursday's game. I do. We're going to see some of the strength of LeBron and I think the home crowd's going to be there. It's just that to beat this team four times with Jokic at this level, and of course Murray down the stretch, but Jokic is the thing. Like he doesn't slip on even, it seems like, a trip down the floor. He's sprinting still. And that to me is what makes them what they are and why it's so difficult for the Lakers to not just think about winning one game at home, but to get over that ultimate hump is man, you just have to kind of give him some respect.
Absolutely. Like, look, that's why, again, I wanted to play them. They've got the best player. They're the best team. We're either going to beat them or we're going to find out exactly where we're not good enough. And the last several years of this team, they've changed so much that it's been unable to really get clear answers on that. There's always been sort of extenuating circumstances going on where it's like, oh, well, these guys just met each other 6 weeks ago. They just started playing together. No, we had a training camp. We had a whole season to be able to get through and figure things out. And I don't think we got nearly enough meat off that bone. But let's take a break here. And when we come back, I want to pull our attention back to the game and to the adjustment that Denver made and why I think it was so crucial. And we'll go from there.
Hey guys, Trudell here. What's going on with your teeth? I ask because mine are feeling and looking great thanks to Dr. Jonathan Goodbye. Dr. Goodbye is a lifelong Lakers fan. Example, when I first met him, we were discussing Phil Jackson's preferred second unit in 2009, so he knows his stuff. Then I walked into his state-of-the-art office in Beverly Hills, and it is nice. It's like a relaxing spa. It's got TVs in the ceiling that connect to your headphones so you can watch shows while you get your dental work done. They even give you this calming hot-scented towel on your face. If you have a healthy mouth, Dr. Gabay can keep it that way. He also specializes in cosmetic transformations, including veneers, crowns, Invisalign, and implants. Dr. Gabay works with his own in-house lab in Beverly Hills, so you know exactly what you're getting. Tell them that Mike Trudell sent you, and you'll get a full consultation, including 3D x-ray, for free. That's a $950 value. So if you're in the Los Angeles area and you need a dentist you can trust, call Dr. Gabay, the official dentist of the Laker Film Room podcast, at 310-707-1005 or visit bhsmile.com.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
So earlier in the day, it started with getting the top three finalists for the various awards around the NBA. And AD did not make the top three finalists there. Of course, we'll have some podcast about that down the road.
For Defensive Player of the Year, thank you. We should be clear about that.
So AD hits 14 straight shots in that game, just pulling out, just going into the entire bag, just a beautiful array of all of his moves in a season where we've had so many discussions about those bigger type of fives giving him issues. This is the way that he used to really cook them, and boy did he. And just unbelievable offensive performance from AD. And that was part of the, like, oh crap, the Lakers are kicking their ass. The headline of that was him. And then of course D'Angelo Russell, right? Making just so good to see him have that game, and I hope he's able to carry that forward. But Lakers go up by 20, and Denver makes an adjustment, putting Gordon onto AD. The way that the Lakers were attacking on a lot of these D were on LeBron and AD ball screens in terms of how they got that big lead. LeBron had 10 assists fairly early, and a lot of it were on high ball screen type of situations. Now, the Lakers, remember earlier in the season, Taylor Jenkins, the coach of the Memphis Grizzlies, when Mike asked him, like, hey, what did the Lakers do that make them good or a challenge to go up against? He was like, they run ball screens and all these sorts of variations. And that's true. That's how we run five out. And it's all these, like, twisting, oh, we're going to come from this direction. We ran a triple drag screen in yesterday's game. It didn't work out. It turned into a turnover, but that wasn't because of the play. But there are all of these pick and roll variations where the Lakers started to exploit Denver's ability or the Lakers started to exploit Jokic showing at the level of the screen, which he is very good at. But if you get Anthony Davis behind your defense, he might score on you again and again and again. Then if AD is hitting his jumper and those little step backs and has that touch off the window and all that, Jokic can't hang with him from a foot speed type of perspective. So he was scoring over and over and over again because that package, like, it's a damned if you do, damned if you don't, if you keep Jokic on him. So they make the switch. And this is where I think a crucial decision was made, is that the whole premise of how AD was beating Jokic was largely his foot speed, right? Beating him to the spot. I'm talking purely on offense right now. And just a lot of that, like, I once was a guard, but now I'm this size, but I can still do the guardy type of things. All of that was being shown. That is not the natural advantage that he has over Aaron Gordon. And so the question is, do you keep giving the ball to Anthony Davis, or do you keep attacking Nikola Jokic? Right? That's the fundamental philosophical question that you're given. Once they make that switch, are you saying that the natural disadvantage is Jokic in a drop, which is what we did? We started running ball screens with LeBron and Rui, and with Rui as the screen setter and rolling to the basket, which Rui is okay at in a holistic sense. Rui was struggling. Talk about two guys that were having completely opposite offensive games. The other player to have at the other end of that ball screen with LeBron, ideally, is Anthony Davis. And if they take that away, you have to run, get into a different look in order to get AD the ball, in my opinion. That's the way, that's the correct way to go when a guy's having a game like that. I believe that there's no game where a player hits 14 consecutive shots in a super high level Western Conference Finals level intensity game like Mike was talking about. When a guy can hit 14 straight shots in a game like that, there is no way he should not take 20 shots in that game. You know what I mean? But what the Lakers did was they kept attacking off of ball screens, and they kept attacking the defensive weakness. Darvin said it after the game, right? Like, what they were looking to do was mismatch hunt. So I just want to lay that out on the table, D. I'm curious your thoughts on that.
So earlier I was pretty calm. I'm no longer going to be calm now, because tactics is where I can be a little bit more animated and trying to understand what the tactics were and where the Lakers contributed to their own downfall. I'm glad you framed this the way that you framed it, Pete, in terms of, like, they put Gordon on AD in order to try to slow AD down and in order to take AD.
We gave him the ball once and AD scored on him.
That's one part of this. The other part of this, though, is that what they actually did was put KCP on LeBron. And so there's two parts of this. And Gordon on AD, I still think they should be targeting Aaron Gordon more. Right. So I think they should have posted him up more. I think that they should have still put him in ball screens. Like, I think that there are still more things that you could do to attack Aaron Gordon. He's got better feet. He's going to move faster. He's going to do all of this stuff. The Lakers went to a position where they put AD in the corner and they put LeBron at the top of the floor to operate as a ball handler. And
AD, who'd been dominating the game.
Yes.
You put him in the corner.
There's an AD part of this, but there's a LeBron part of this, and I want to focus
My
on
apologies.
The LeBron part of this for a second. Putting KCP on LeBron is basically a gambit. It's this idea of, we think you're going to continue to use LeBron as a ball handler, and so we're going to put a ball handling defender on you.
Right.
And the Lakers said, correct. We're going to continue to use this dude as a ball handler, and we're going to play into this idea that your best on-ball defender, who is not Aaron Gordon, we're going to put him on this dude. You're going to try to screen him, and this is our best dude at getting over screens. And the Lakers did it over and over and over again and played into this idea. And I guarantee you, Pete, when they go back and watch the film, they're going to say, we got some good stuff out of this, but what the hell were we thinking playing LeBron 30 feet from the basket against a dude who he outweighs by 50 pounds?
So what's the alternative?
The alternative is to put the ball into Austin Reeves' hands, Mike.
This is kind of, again, a microcosm of not just the whole season, but this is also just LeBron and his career. And usually, like, whatever a defense wants to do, LeBron usually has some answer just by himself. And I think this at this stage, it that would have been the answer was either post up Anthony Davis or let Austin run, or if they're going to move KCP off of him, or like they're the Lakers have all these options to attack and they didn't do any of that. So they're, but I think that it's also like from a, this is part of where I feel for Darvin Ham, where like, what are you going to call, like call timeout, call LeBron over and just say, like, it's very hard to do that.
Somebody, so it's not even a matter of that, in my opinion. It's more a matter of a pro Anthony Davis. Like, I don't always think on the games where it's like, oh, AD didn't get enough shots. We didn't do enough to get him the ball. I don't always agree with that. In that case, I like go down with the guy that took, that made 14 consecutive shots, taking 30 shots in that game. You know what I'm saying? Well,
I don't think you're not going to get any disagreement about Anthony Davis on this. I will say that like in the third quarter, the Lakers had their lead. AD picks up his third foul and that changed things a little. And then he picks up his fourth and then he goes out for rest earlier because of that. And then he checks back in the fourth quarter and it's in this kind of different kind of game by then. So I think AD's natural rest pattern was part of why they went away from him and they were trying to find these other ways. But at some point, Pete, there's no doubt like, all right, let maybe call something and just figure out a way to get him a touch or like other than the lob that D'Angelo tried to throw right into the fifth row, which was early, I guess, in that stanza. Well,
is the offense built around the players or is it built around running ball screens? Because that's what changed, is that they changed their ball screen coverage. Darius, please pick up on your point about like playing kind of right into what they were doing.
If they're going to defend LeBron with a small player, then you reorient your offense and you want to play through LeBron, then play through LeBron. He does have a mismatch at that point.
It's just not like, on the perimeter.
Throughout the rest of the game.
Not on the ball screen.
Yeah, just throughout the rest of the game, it's just like they put Aaron Gordon on him. Fine. The Lakers countered that by saying, we're going to run ball screens between our power forward and our center every single time in the third quarter. The Lakers went into halftime up by 15, largely on the strength of Anthony Davis being amazing in isolation plays against Jokic, mostly, and D'Angelo Russell hitting a bunch of shots. LeBron was like 4 for 9, or he was like 2 for 7 at one point, or 2 for 6.
Yeah, he had what, 14 in the fourth quarter? That was his big quarter, was that
and
fourth.
So part of what ended up happening was the Lakers were not getting as good as shots down the stretch. And LeBron bailed them out with a couple of threes and then that step through and one and then the hard drive layup. His advantages against Jokic and ball screens were he was getting downhill to the basket. And Jokic had to play in a drop. And when you play in a drop against LeBron James, you open up all of these avenues to him. You open up every avenue that he has at his disposal. A, he could just, when you go under, he can shoot the pull-up, which he's very good at this season. He can drive. And he drove a couple of times. One time he got a layup and one time he missed. He has the pocket pass to AD, which he hit him for twice to start the third quarter. Both ended up in and ones. And then on the play that triggered the defensive switch of assignments, Jamal Murray had to tag on Anthony Davis. And he tagged earlier this time because he had picked up two fouls on the two previous plays. And LeBron hit Austin coming up the right sideline for an open three. And that's ball game there. If you're the Lakers, you're like, this action works. You don't have a solution for this specific action. But Denver did. They switched and they put Gordon on to Davis and they put KCP on to LeBron and said, run ball screens this way. Please try. And the Lakers continued to just run ball screens the entire time. And so to my point, Pete, is that at that point, you have to then change. And you have to adjust. And you have to say, let's put someone else on the ball. Let's screen with LeBron. Oh, you want to guard LeBron with a small dude? Put that dude in screen actions. Make KCP hedge. Make him defend LeBron in the post if you want to continue to play through LeBron. To your point, hey, maybe just continue to play through Anthony Davis because he's the dude.
I don't think ball screens were always the answer. I don't think it's the solution here. I think it's triple threat position. It's getting a guy on a catch and face up. And that's both LeBron and AD who can do that very well. But that's the reorientation. That's the adjustment, is that if you're getting the ball in someone else's hands, I love Austin. It's been great. D'Lo had a great game. That was a super high level game, and expecting them to beat really good ball screen defenders, right? Really good pick and roll defense, a champion at that level. That's too high of an offensive ask. The guy who was kicking ass on offense was Anthony Davis. And so to me, building what you're doing that night is around that premise. So let's take another break and keep it going.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Well, clearly the Lakers had a good plan of how to attack Denver with Anthony Davis to start the game. He did so. And he kicked their ass. And to the point where they built a 15-point lead at halftime, and then they added on to it to get to 20 early in the third quarter. And then once the adjustment came, I guess the quick summary of what you guys are saying is that the Lakers didn't have a counter to their Denver's
counter. They didn't go to it.
That's what I mean, yeah. Not that there isn't something that exists, but they didn't counter what Denver put out there right away. And that's something you can examine throughout the season. Like, how often does that happen? How often does it happen in playoff games? Why did Denver not go to that earlier? Why did they just let AD chew up Jokic for that long? And this is where, Darvin Ham made a comment after game one, basically about, okay, well, there isn't another adjustment to go to defending Jokic. And I think they used it, which is just more Anthony Davis in game two. And they did it and it worked.
Another thing too that was cool, but I'm sorry.
And so the coaches are all sitting around, right? And they're trying to figure these things out. But how much of that is the players? How much of that is LeBron? How much of that is Anthony Davis? How much of that is Darvin Ham? How much of that is one of the guards and Reeves or Russell recognizing it? How much of that is Denver? It's a blame pie type thing. But I guess ultimately Denver made the adjustment. The Lakers didn't necessarily adjust back in the correct way, even if LeBron started to create some things on its own that
he always will.
As they typically have. Yeah, he always will have some sort of an answer. But that left Anthony Davis essentially out of the picture in some ways. And, he clearly was the player that they couldn't stop earlier up until they switched their tactic.
Just one of the first shots that he got out after that flurry, D, was a corner three on a spot up. And that wasn't the type of shot that he was getting to get onto that hot track. So to me, it's just like, that guy has it going. That to me has to be the center of your offensive universe.
And I disagree that LeBron figured it out, honestly. Mm-hmm. LeBron scored 14 points. He got 9 on 2 threes where guys went under and he made the shots. And so credit to LeBron. And then he got a post up against KCP, which is the play I've been asking for. Is like, if you're going to defend him with this dude, then post this guy up.
That's where your advantage is.
And then he backed him down. They came with a late double. LeBron stepped through and he hit the fadeaway jumper that ended up being in and one. That was the closest thing that I feel like LeBron got to figuring it out. The other play was a straight, I'm putting my head down and driving to the basket off of a pick and roll against Jokic and drop. And honestly, one of the reasons why I'm frustrated about this game isn't because of the heartbreak. It's not because of the buzzer beater. Like, yes, those things are dispiriting. I'm frustrated because the Lakers clearly have avenues in order to score on the Nuggets. And in this specific game, I thought they exploited one of the weaker defensive games Jokic has had against the Lakers, I think, in this streak of 10 wins. Jokic has pretty much done a good job at taking away some of the angle passing stuff and AD's drives. And he's really done a good job defensively. He's been good at protecting the basket and using his hands and just a bunch of stuff. And the Lakers basically looked at Jokic the way that they would have looked at Jokic in Mike's regard like 4 years ago, Jokic, which was like, oh, you're the guy who's sort of a defensive liability and who can be attacked in space and who can be put in pick and roll and not necessarily hold up with foot speed. And they went away from that entire idea of we can accomplish all of these things against this defense simply by reorganizing and reshaping the offense. And I just thought the counter never came. The counter to the counter never came. And it's super frustrating when you think about the meat left on the bone. The reason why I say that they never really figured it out, the Lakers went up 68-48 after that Austin three, and it was a nice round number. It's 20 points with 10 minutes left in the third quarter. So there's 22 minutes left of game action, and the Lakers have 68 points. They finish with 99.
Yeah, ultimately, yep. They scored 20 points in the third quarter and 20 points in the fourth quarter. And so Denver, like, to just add one thing about the building, Denver is going to score late. They get great shots. You have to score. Like, that's, I think, right. I don't, that's, know that there's a defensive answer for Jokic. Yeah, they just, the Lakers stopped being able to score in that. Not just the point of the game that Darius is talking about.
Yeah, and that happened in game one too, right? And so that to me is the story of the series going forward, and part of the truths that are being revealed about the team is that the Lakers have struggled on the offensive end in both games. And so that's, I think, where a lot of our discussion needs to go.
A made Rui layup here, a made Rui dunk there, a made LeBron
a different
backhand
conversation,
layup here.
Whole different podcast. Yep.
At least puts more pressure on Denver to get two or three more baskets. Those are baskets the Lakers didn't get. It also shows why the margin for error is so slim. I'm both encouraged by what the Lakers have been able to show and what they've been able to accomplish, considering the things that they have not done that they could have done better, while also being discouraged by the fact that, I've said this a bunch of times in playoffs past, Pete, that it's hard enough to beat a very good team four times in seven games. It's almost impossible to beat them five times in seven games.
Yeah.
And that's what the Lakers are going to have to do here. If they're going to win the series, it's because they would have gotten five wins. And the fifth one was the one that they just gave away.
Just the other, there's just a unique element to this as well, in that, so the Lakers beat this Denver team in the conference finals, of course, in 2020, and it was Jokic and Murray and Porter Jr. The rest of the team is pretty much new. And then Denver, you know, gets Gordon, and they find the answers, not just to beat the Lakers, but to beat everybody. And so some of what Pete was talking about, now they're really revealing where the Lakers are, where these shortfalls are, but it's not like a young team where, oh, now this is the way, you know, this is a way to beat them. And maybe you add a player in the offseason. It's like LeBron's 39. And that's the hard part.
We're playing these games now.
There isn't necessarily.
It made progress, Mike. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Right. I'm not burying the series, but I'm saying, like, that this is not the situation where you can come back and be like, okay, you're close, and just add these pieces and then next year. But I'll save that for, we'll see how the Lakers respond, and they can do more things to have success in this series. It's just, again, they'd have to do it four out of five times now.
Oh, of course.
And that's why it's so difficult not to get one of those first two wins, where maybe then if you're starting to figure out as it goes, and you're starting to unlock that offense, but you've got to win in the bank, and you know you can basically win one home game to get back to game six, and then who knows?
Yeah.
Like, that's the hard part, I think. That's part of the, like, why the plane is a little more quiet.
Yeah.
Just the recognition of, if you've been in playoff series past, the recognition of missed opportunity is tough to cope with.
It's one of the big stories of the season. Lots of missed opportunity this season. We're going to wrap up here, and we'll do a preview for game three tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. They will.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance.
Right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move.
Two, one,
miss it!
Unbelievable.
for the victory. It's over.
And shot clock now to 5. Bryant.
Yes.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.